Then Job replied to the Lord, I know that you can do all things. No purpose of yours can be thwarted. You asked, who is this that obscures my plans without knowledge? Surely I spoke of things I did not understand, things too wonderful for me to know. You said, listen now and I will speak. I will question you and you shall answer me. My ears had heard of you, but now my eyes have seen you. Therefore I despise myself. I repent in dust and ashes. After Job had prayed for his friends, the Lord restored his fortune and gave him twice as much as he had before. All his brothers and sisters and everyone who had known him before came and ate with him in his house. They comforted and consoled him over all the trouble the Lord had brought on him, and each one gave him a piece of silver and a gold ring. The Lord blessed the latter part of Job's life more than the former part. He had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, and 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 donkeys. And he also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. The first daughter was named Jemima, the second Keziah, and the third Keren Kapuch. Nowhere in all the land were there found women as beautiful as Job's daughters, and their father granted them an inheritance along with their brothers. After this, Job lived 140 years. He saw his children and their children to the fourth generation. And so Job died, an old man and full of years.
Unusually, I've been to the cinema twice in a week recently. Last weekend, Jane and I took the boys to see Paddington in Peru. Have you seen Paddington in Peru? It's lots to tug the heartstrings with themes of fostering and adoption. So great for us, but not at all relevant today. But on Friday, Jane and I also went to see Small Things Like These. Have you heard of that film? It's based on a small book, a short novel by Claire Keegan. It's a lovely film. It stars Cillian Murphy. It's set in a small town in 1980s Ireland, where the main character is a father to 5 daughters. Seems a theme for this morning. As the local coal merchant, he delivers sacks of coal from the back of his beautifully depicted old truck all around the town. And while he does this, he becomes aware of some awful things happening in the local Magdalene laundry attached to the local convent. I'm sure you've heard of Magdalene laundries and the things that happened there. But the story in the film and in the book is not specifically about that. It's about him and how he processes this knowledge that he has and thinks about what he should do in response to that. Knowing that whatever he does, there will be serious ramifications for people he knows. I won't tell you what happens. Read the book or see the film. And of course, it's not only on the big screen that we've seen this week the fallout from those who knew about awful things, taking decisions about who to tell or not to tell. As Bridget mentioned earlier, we've had the report this week in the Church of England and Justin Welby's resignation. And I think we can say something useful about that looking at Job. So I will warn you that later on I will be mentioning some of the background to Justin Welby's resignation, which involves criminal activity and abuse, which is difficult to hear, difficult to talk about. So if you need to be somewhere else, if you need to move around, if you need to step outside or find someone to talk to, please make sure you do that. But yes, as we've heard, we're finishing up with Job, this book in the Old Testament named after this man called Job and someone else whose situation raises hard questions, as we've been hearing about over the past few weeks. You may have heard none, 1, 2, or 3 of the previous talks about Job. You can always catch up on the website. One of the issues with having 4 different speakers talk about Job is that you might get 4 quite different takes on what he meant. But one of the advantages of having four different speakers is that you might get four quite different takes on what it meant. And that's fine. This is wisdom literature in the Old Testament, in the Bible. Draws us in. It makes us think. It shows us something of what God is like, but it also shines a light on what humans are like. How we think and act in the world, how we respond or don't respond to God, how we treat each other. It's a text which has no easy answers, maybe just questions, nudges and pointers. So we've had three quite personal takes on Job and his story, and I'm probably bringing another. In particular, I want to look at Job through some ideas and thinking around trauma. Trauma is maybe a bit of a buzzword that gets applied quite widely, and sometimes it's easy to be a bit dismissive maybe, but I think it helps us to see what might be going on here. So just quickly, by way of reminder, or to help you if you haven't caught all of what we've been talking about, Jevon started us off in chapter 1 of Job. Feel free to flick through the chapters as I go, if you like, there in the middle of the Bible. So chapter 1, where we meet this man, Job, blameless and upright, we're told. He feared God, but he shunned evil. He was a prosperous man with a large extended family. But then, for reasons which we won't worry about this morning, bad things happen to him. His family all die, except his wife, and Job himself is struck with this awful, awful illness. Job's response is summed up in a couple of verses. Shall we accept good from God and not trouble? And naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall depart. The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised. Note, because it's going to be significant later, that despite the modern song which has been based on these words, Job does not directly address God here. He talks about God. He doesn't address, he just says, the name of the Lord be praised. And this perhaps encapsulates Job's worldview at the start. And we are assured that in saying these things, Job did not sin. But, as we shall see, events conspired to challenge this view. The Lord God is indeed the creator and sustainer of life, the universe and everything, but it is more complicated than that. Chris took us to chapter 23 in the middle of the book, which begins, then Job replied, which gives us a clue that perhaps we've been dropped into the middle of a conversation, as we have. And since the beginning of Job's troubles, three friends have turned up. Friends, sort of. They're having a long, extended conversation with him. At heart, they are saying, God rewards good people with good things and curses bad people with bad things. So, Job, what have you done to deserve all this? And Job says, yes, I know that's how God works, but I also know that I haven't done anything wrong. So I don't know why all this is happening. And as we read these middle chapters of the book, this conversation, we see that Job is quite conflicted. He one time expresses faith in God. I know that my Redeemer lives. And other times he's cursing the day he was born. In trauma studies, it's recognized that individuals experience major shifts in worldview assumptions and disruption to basic belief systems as a result of trauma. We all have stories we tell ourselves about how the world works, and these are good and helpful most of the time. They help us navigate the world around us. But traumatic events challenge these stories and perhaps cause them to break down. Job's assumptions about God, especially about God's justice, good to the good, bad to the bad, are suddenly and radically challenged by his experience of trauma. And this goes on and on, if you've read Job, on and on, with Job and his three friends having round after round of conversation, all in poetry. Anyway, after all that, we get to chapter 38, which Cherry helped us with a couple of weeks ago, where at last we might say, God speaks. God's intention is to open Job's mind and heart to a bigger picture. He says, brace yourself like a man. I will question you and you shall answer me. I hope you're noticing, as I said, there's lots to do with speaking. Who's speaking? Raises the question of what is correct to say and whom. So keep that in mind. And then God does indeed question him. If you look at chapter 38, where were you? Have you ever? Do you know? On and on and on. We get these questions. You don't know what Job was thinking. I think it's all about God's just delight in creation. There's a lot of creation vocabulary going on there. And one thing it's showing Job is that there's a lot more to the created universe than Job knows about. Yes, God is over all creation. He made, knows, and loves it. But maybe Job doesn't know everything about the way it works. Anyway, at the end of God's first speech, Job falls silently and slightly ironically says, I will say nothing. And then God's off again, chapter 40, chapter 7. Brace yourself like a man, he says exactly the same thing again. I will question you and you shall answer me. More questions, this time about huge sea monsters, Leviathan and Behemoth, that are also part of God's creation, even though they would have been understood as maybe forces of evil. And at the end of that time, we come to today's reading, not before time, I suspect you're thinking. Job replies to the Lord. Job acknowledges that God can do all things. God's purposes will prevail. And then he starts by quoting back God's question from the start of God's first speech. You asked, who is this who obscures my plans without knowledge? And Job goes on to acknowledge that he didn't understand what he was talking about before, about things too wonderful, too big, too complex for him to understand. And then, in verse 4 of chapter 42, bear with me a minute, Job quotes from the beginning of God's second speech. The NIV translators have added the words, you said, you asked, which are not there in the original. But they make it clear that Job is quoting what God said. But I want to suggest, I'm not alone in suggesting this, don't worry, that they've put those words in the wrong place. If you look back to the start of chapter 41, you'll see that God did not say, listen now and I will speak. God did say, I will question you and you shall answer me. So if it's Job saying to God, listen now and I will speak, that fits with Job's progression through the book. At the start, Job said, may the name of the Lord be praised. And there's been a great long conversation about God between these characters. And it's a bit like God's been sitting there waiting for them to speak to him. God's there in the corner, overhearing the conversation, getting a bit frustrated until at the beginning of each speech, each of God's speeches, we hear, you shall answer me. And now Job says, I will speak. This is what God wanted all along, for Job to speak to God, not just about God. Job says, my ears had heard of you. Previously, I knew of you by hearsay. But now my eyes have seen you. Now I know you directly. We are having a direct conversation. And this will reshape his understanding of God's justice. Job's simple rules about God's justice are broken down. But that's okay. He's come to a deeper place with God where he knows he doesn't know or understand. Chapter 41, verse 5 tells us God can make a house pet of the biggest monsters. And if he can do that, he can certainly handle all the suffering and injustice in the world in God's own way. And in verse 6, Job makes his final declaration of trust in God. This is an extraordinarily difficult verse to translate and to understand. One commentator has written there are probably 10 different ways to translate this verse. So we won't go over them all. But there's one translation which says this, therefore I retract my words, and I am comforted concerning dust and ashes, where dust and ashes represent the human condition. So in other words, I take back what I said about you, God, that is, that you were unjust or cruel. My heart is moved. My mind is changed. I am comforted just to be human and no longer to demand to understand the things of God. If you want to know more about how we might get to that translation, we can maybe think about it, talk to me afterwards. But let's come back to now. How's your week been? For much of this week, my thoughts have been dominated by what's been going on in the Anglican Church. Of course, Justin Welby's resignation hit the headlines, but in the days before that, there was also the news about the report that had been published into abuse over many years by a man called John Smith, or Smythe. Smith with a Y in the middle. Over many years in the 1970s and 80s, he had been regularly been beating young men and teenage boys to the point where they were bleeding. He wasn't ordained, but he was connected to powerful people within the church. And he had access to boys through a Christian summer camp, and through that to students at elite public schools. This is all very shocking. But the report also went into what was happening around him that allowed the abuse to go on for so many years. And what was happening was that a number of clergy knew pretty much exactly what was going on, but chose to keep it secret among them. Not just to keep it secret, which at the time was what some of the boys' families wanted, but they also failed to act to stop the abuse continuing, both in the UK and later in Zimbabwe and South Africa. Justin Welby was not one of that small group, but the report found that possibly then and certainly later, he knew enough of what was happening so that he should have made sure something was done about it. But what hit me personally hardest is that among that group that kept that secret was the vicar of the church I was attending while I was at university in the late 1980s. I didn't know him well, he wouldn't remember me. I was just one of many students attending his church. But we looked up to him in leadership of a vibrant church fellowship. And at the same time, he was active in keeping secret from the church authorities, from the police, this awful abuse. You may have had a similar reaction, you may not. You may have felt a similar reaction to the disclosures about Mike Pilavarci over the last couple of years. There might be other situations where your gut reaction has been, how can this be? I thought I knew this person. God, what is going on? Where is the justice in this? When Chris spoke, he referred to his reaction to the Chris Carver case and his gut-felt sense of injustice around that. We see it when there's a serious case review into the death of a young child at the hands of those who are supposed to be loving and caring for them. Maybe you're a victim or survivor of some form of abuse. We don't all have to know everyone's stories, but God knows. And we want to shout with Job, this isn't how the world is supposed to work. This isn't how I thought the world did work. What is God doing? I think Job's story in the wisdom of the Bible can help. God's speeches confirm that God is the creator of the universe. God delights in creation. God loves creation and the creatures in it, including humans, but God does not micromanage creation. God, in love, allows autonomy for creatures, and some of them will do awful things that God does not want them to do. So what does Job do in response? Job speaks. God does not want Job's silence. He wants his speech. And it doesn't have to be well-ordered, well-thought-out speech. It doesn't have to be in poetry. We are invited to speak to God, not just about God. To speak, shout, rage, whisper. To take our questions and our anger. Why did this happen? Why did no one stop it? How could he have done this? And then Job listens. Again, he listens to God. He doesn't listen to someone talking about God. He listens to God. No longer relying on hearsay, he has a direct experience of God. We are invited to listen too. When I was thinking about all that stuff this week, I found it had to be a conscious choice to direct my speech to God. But when I did, I sensed God's first response was, yes, I hate it too. Maybe that doesn't take away the questions about why God didn't stop what was happening, but it puts God on the side of the abused, on the side of the oppressed, on the side of those who suffer injustice. Job speaks, Job listens, and Job acts. We heard the epilogue of the book of Job, in which he gets a new family and wealth, and there are big questions about whether these could ever substitute for what he'd lost in the first place. But that's not for now. But right at the end, we see that Job did something very radical. The narrator does something quite radical in naming the daughters, but not the sons. Did you notice that? And Job gives an inheritance to the daughters equal to the inheritance to the sons. Completely radical for that time. It might not sound much to us, but that was a step towards justice that Job took, which stood out at the time. Bill Furlong, the main character in small things like these, had to decide how and whether to act, given his knowledge of injustice. We are invited to act too, to take what steps we can towards justice, not to cover up injustice. I should stop. I've probably fallen into Job's trap of talking too much about God. At some point, we need to take time to talk to God, to express how we're feeling, express how we're really feeling. Anger, dismay, shock, weariness. And then listen for the voice of God.